Welcome to this episode of Better Product Launch, where we're sitting down with a founder to give you an inside look into their new product launch.
So today we're talking to Brian Smith, co-founder of Leon, a corporate wellness platform that focuses on creating a world where work empowers a healthier life. Brian, so awesome to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Cool. Well, yeah, I guess just to start, I mean, we're going to be talking about Leon pretty much this whole episode. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I would love to hear a little bit about, like, what is Leon? Just kind of give us somewhere to start.
Leon, at its heart, is a data platform. And then what I mean by that is, are you guys familiar with your typical employee engagement platforms or companies like CultureAmp or 15.5 or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
So we look at companies like that as obviously having value. But if you look at the name of, like, employee engagement, they don't necessarily engage the employee, right? They engage managers and leaders on how to potentially make better decisions and whatnot. So we looked at the space as no one is really the advocate on sort of the health or the wellness or the mentality of the employee themselves. So what we do is we have a platform which is pretty much integrated into every single thing you can imagine, from, you know, pretty much every studio or gym within the country, you know, your headspaces, your talk spaces of the world, bike shares, races, events, pretty much everything. And then what we do is we use surveys and engagement metrics to ultimately self-detect, early detect or mitigate things like burnout, mental health, performance decrements for employees themselves.
It seems to me like, and you probably wouldn't speak negatively of competitors in the space, but it seems to me like what you're describing is like there's almost a table stakes sort of employee engagement assessment that we have right now, which to your point really targets leaders and not necessarily the employees themselves. And it's almost like when you talk about wellness, to me, that's almost like the difference between talking about, like, you know, investing or I guess maybe saving money. It's like something for the long term. It's like give a little now to get a big return later. And it's like employee happiness is almost this like overarching thing that's not as easy to measure through the tools that we are doing today, which is just like surveys and 360 reviews and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, totally. So, I mean, it's important to understand my background. So, like, I come from a sports science background. So we use data analytics to both predict performance and injury in professional athletes. And stuff like mental health and burnout and stuff is all sort of quantifiable, but companies aren't looking at it the right way. You know, especially if you take burnout, and I'm assuming you guys have experienced burnout. No, people
never
burnout.
Well, why do I look burnout to you? Like I'm totally
like
fine.
Podcast, you guys do a week. But you know, it's one of these things where burnout within itself is a physiological process. You know, you can't just manage your way out of burnout. So to sort of wrap it all up in a bow for you is, we are looking to superpower employees and optimize employees. We want to be the employee advocate. All right. And then doing that, we make companies better, but we're not necessarily trying to make managers better or leaders better. We want to make people better because, and especially now, if you look at the space that we're in from working from home and never ultimately going back to the office, you know, the idea of like company culture is almost dead to a certain extent. Right. So now we just need to create more resilient, more adaptive, badass employees to sort of tell you the truth.
Yeah. And that's, you brought up the sort of times that we're in and the remote work and even burnout. I think I've been seeing a lot more lately about the hustle, the criticism against like the hustle culture, for example, like with founders and just like taking care of yourself even as a founder. So it feels like not even just with founders, but employees having to juggle being at home with families and all that. It almost seems like a lot of that stuff has come to the fore a lot more today than maybe even a year ago. Have you seen the impacts even as Leon, as you guys have gone to market, like as you're selling, have you noticed any shift in the sentiment around that topic?
Yeah, before COVID, on average with our employee clients, we saw, I believe it was about 34% rolling 90-day average on burnout, right? Or employees that were experiencing symptoms of burnout. Since COVID, that has jumped up to about 62%, which is pretty powerful, right? If you think about it, you know, burnout is one of these things where, like, when I say it's physiological, it is 100% physiological, meaning like I can test burnout in blood testing, right? Like I can predict it. I can actually see it. So that's why, you know, managing a little less or taking a day off or giving your employee less responsibility, it's suddenly a fix for burnout. And if you think about it, where burnout goes long term, it leads to depression, it leads to alcoholism, it leads to high blood pressure. I mean, there's a lot of sort of physiological factors that come into play with burnout. you know, but no one is actually looking at it in a way that is sort of detectable in any sort of thing. But, you know, ultimately, we just need better data. And that was sort of the issues with companies as a whole.
That's interesting to be able to see burnout, that it physically manifests. First of all, has like changed my entire perspective on burnout, for sure. That's interesting. But I kind of want to go back to the beginning of Leon. So you mentioned you have a sports science background, that you were looking at performance, potential for injury. How did you identify that this was what you were doing there had applications in kind of inside companies?
Yeah, professional athlete and, you know, a person like you or I, although they're very different than, you know, someone who can run a half a mile in like a minute and 45 seconds, ultimately we're really the same, right? And we still experience stress and mental health issues and, you know, performance detriments the same way as a professional athlete. You know, so the way that I looked at all this is that if I can ultimately predict things like burnout or, you know, mental health issues or whatnot in a professional athlete, I should be able to do it to the same type of, you know, the same human being, but just in a different space. You know, and what's curious about the tech space, which is what we primarily work in, is that it's all about performance, right? You know, you show up every single day and you try to scale your company at 10x. You know, just because you're not running or jumping while you're doing that doesn't mean that the cost, meaning from like a physiological perspective, isn't the same. In a lot of ways, it's sometimes greater, right? Because at least those athletes have recovery built in and they have coaches that support them. And it's like, it's much more understood rather than, you know, some sales manager who's sort of beating you over the head trying to get those numbers up.
I'm curious. So when you talk about burnout, you're using AI, you say, on the site to do that. What type of things are you looking for in employees to sort of detect burnout, knowing that it's not like, you know, maybe an instant, or maybe it is. I guess I imagine it's not like an instant thing, like, oh, we can tell that person's burnout today. It seems like something would build up over time. How have you sort of engineered a product that looks more forward-looking like that than just how somebody's doing right now?
So our burnout prediction index is most of the time done on a 90-day rolling average, because you are right. There's too much noise in the data on a monthly basis to really sort of get any quantifiable sort of metric. So we're ultimately collecting data pretty consistently. So we roll out monthly surveys within the product, which are more employer-driven. But we also have sort of pulse surveys that are rolled out when an employee accesses certain discounts within the product or whatnot. So we ultimately have a continuous flow of survey data coming in. And luckily with burnout and mental health, especially in tech, there's a ton of proxy data that we've been able to model off of. But that being said, our company has been around for roughly about 4 years. And we started off as a sort of traditional corporate wellness product, using our integrations to allow companies to subsidize spend and whatnot within our platform for different services. But the great part about that is that once at a time, we were collecting data back. So that allowed us to understand how often someone went to the gym, how many miles they rode on a city bike or a bike share, how many classes they take. And then you correlate that back with sleep data, activity data, survey data, and then we can eventually find the signal that we're looking for.
Sounds like you use proxy data to start. You got in enough places to be able to generate your own data sources. And now it looks like you're productizing almost the data that you have available. So at that stage, at the stage you're at now, getting to this, catching us up to the present, how are you making product decisions? So from the data that you've gathered, the insights you've gleaned, then how are you making that leap going to product and deciding what's going into the product and how you're going to market?
The product is interesting because there's two different aspects of it, right? There's a consumer product and then there's an employer product, because even though we do provide metrics and reporting and all these other things back to companies, ultimately we have to be able to get employees to engage within the product, right? So essentially what happens is on a monthly basis, our system kicks out what we call playbooks, all right? Within those playbooks, you're going to have a curated services, which we've modeled against, meaning so like if we see that someone is burned out or has mental health issues or whatever have you, we've sort of used data to sort of understand what services they're most likely to engage with, right? So again, if that is a Headspace program, if that is, you know, virtual therapy or yoga or meditation or even blood testing to a certain extent, if we get the clinical testing. All right, but then what we also do is we curate specific learning modules and content for the employee so they can understand exactly what burnout is, how it happened, how to prevent it, you know, and how to sort of get rid of it. And then also too, it creates an environment where they're actually owning their health, which is so important because that's what we're trying to do in everyday health. In medicine, we want to create ownership. So that's exactly what we're trying to do on the employee level. And then we also automate a series of like pop-up events, virtual events, live events, yearly events that these employees can engage with other similar people that might be going through the same problem.
So obviously, Leon is very data-driven. It's getting a sense for people. It's like really focused on the person. Is that how you would consider your solution different from like the general kind of employee engagement tools?
Yeah, there's two different things that really differentiate us. One is that we're human focused or we're employee focused. So in a lot of ways, we remove any of the friction points that HR usually has when trying to implement either wellness products or engagement products or even like perk products, right? Because if you think about it, most of the time, these HR managers, they're just buying whatever, you know, sells them the best and sort of throwing it out the wall to sort of see what works. But as human beings, we're very subjective. And the way that I engage in my health might be completely different than the way that you engage in your health. So we're able to give them sort of more optionality. But on the other part of it, you know, and we haven't sort of got into this, what we actually do as well is we're working towards or in the process of tying those metrics back to performance. Say a company's trying to close a Series A. All right, now closing a Series A or scaling to 10X or pushing out like a product in record time usually has a cost, meaning like a people cost of doing business, right? And what is that usually? All right, that is, you know, burnout, that is, you know, morale issues, whatever have you. So what we do within the platform we're beta testing right now is the ability to sort of overlay those product pushouts and sort of on a timeline basis and then layering those metrics that we see during that time. So we can tell a company, what was the people cost of doing business, of pushing out that product, right? Because the company that wins is ultimately the company that can repeat performance over and over and over again. It's like a wide receiver in the NFL. It's not the fastest wide receiver. It's the wide receiver who can continuously run fast enough to beat his competition. And companies are the same way, is that you have to be able to repeat performance over and over again. But if you burn out your team and your first product push, are you going to be able to do it again?
So we talked a little bit about how the product has evolved. I'd love to shift to your website. When we talk about better product, we talk about it being almost like a triangle or intersecting Venn diagrams of, you know, marketability, usability, and value, you know, being valuable. So all of those things. So we've talked a little bit about sort of the value part. When I look at the page on your site, that was the first thing I saw before we ever got scheduled to talk. But what stood out to me with your site is the way that you're talking on the site. So like we've had this conversation right now and you're very open and direct about things. And that completely comes through on the site. Right at the very top, you say your employees hate their job. But you don't actually stop there. You actually have a stat, which actually has a link to click to, which is, I just have to applaud you as someone who went to grad school and had to cite my sources. Clearly you did too, because it's coming through on the site. And so anyway, I give you kudos there. But really the site, it's interesting because it feels like it's just a blog post ultimately. Like you have a screenshot at the top, but then as you scroll down, it's just kind of like one long blog post that's sort of, I won't read the whole thing for people. It's fairly short, but it's sort of just like reading almost like a journal entry from the future and, you know, how they got there. I'd love to hear the decision behind that, because this is a fairly unique approach to all the dozens of product sites that I see every day.
Yeah. So I'll start with the 85% of employees hate their job. There was a marketing decision that we had to make is that, you know, first off, every HR tech product you ever see is help your employees love their job more, or, you know, everything is so soft, right? And that's not business and that's not how the world works. And the truth be told, the majority of people don't like their job. All right. And, you know, tech has like this amazing bubble where everybody swears up and down, you know, that they love their job and it's the greatest thing, you know, in the whole entire world. But, you know, if you go to the Midwest or whatever, I mean, or not even the Midwest, just really anywhere, if you go in retail or McDonald's, most people are going to say they love the job. And quite honestly, I love my company, but I would much rather be with my kids right now. We've created this situation where we try to make our employees build their life around their job, you know, and no one likes that. You know, you should be at the point where you can build your job around your life. So there was a point there of just being different when I said the 85% of employees hate their job. So we knew we had to stand out. But that being said, the reason we went copy forward was because for us, we look at ourselves as a category creator to a certain extent. So it's very important for us to define the problem. if I were just to put a bunch of screen images of like what the product looks like and how it works and whatnot, does that really define the problem? Because ultimately what's going to happen is they're just going to lump us, you know, into the same group as any other employee tech space. Or if I, God forbid, mention the word surveys, I'm automatically an employee engagement company. So for me, it was more important to define a problem, what we need to solve. And quite honestly, we're going to stay with that. You know, I was talking to someone today, actually Udi from Gong, who's a director of marketing over there. And, you know, I asked them the simple question. It's like, at what point do you stop defining the problem and start talking about how you're going to fix the problem? And for us, you know, I think it's more important to talk about the problem right now in the most fun, sort of honest, eloquent way as possible. And then once we have enough signal to sort of understand that people get the problem, then we can start talking about the product.
Have you found that to resonate with your buyers? Like, are they just like, whew, I'm sick of the pastels. I'm sick of the touchy-feeliness.
Yeah, you know, and that was the amazing part about it. And, you know, I'll go over some stats with you. So when we launched, we roughly had close to 125,000 hits to the website in 48 hours. We generated within a week 4,000 inbound leads for early access, right? And for a SaaS product with a $30,000 to $40,000 ARR, that's, you know, it's a pretty good thing. But the most interesting part about it is that I had close to 400 direct messages, both telling me how much they hated me, all right, and how much they loved me, right? So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if that's the response that we get, and, you know, truth be told, like, I never experienced that before. So there was like a little depression there for a little bit because I don't have much of a social presence. It's not like I'm an influencer, so I don't know how to sort of handle that process. But it resonated with people, you know, to the point where I think that we'll probably move to starting some sort of community off of it because employees and managers and whatnot were highly engaged by it. Founders got a little bit mad, to tell you the truth, because, you know, founders, it's like we live and die in this culture thing. So they got a little offended, but it was a really, really good response.
Our head of brand, and maybe you've heard this, he talks a lot about people like hot tea or cold tea. Nobody likes warm tea. So yeah, people are going to love it or hate it, but that's where you want to be. You don't want to be in the middle of the roads. But it's got to be hard though to get from the personal side, like get messages where people like vehemently opposed to it. And as you mentioned, I would even say ourselves building a company, I think it's easy to be in denial about it too and just get really emotional or react against something so in your face as well.
There was a time where, you know, there was constant second guessing. And to the point where, you know, our advisors, our investors, they still question it. Like we had I posted something on LinkedIn the other day and it was like good and bad company wellness ideas. And it was an image where it was like microdosing on shrooms. And like we were completely tongue in cheek, but like this is a complete bad idea. You shouldn't microdose on shrooms. But there's actually companies that have done that to build company culture, right? Specifically a certain company that did summer camps on a yearly basis. But that's the type of stuff. And we want to be direct and we want to be honest with our people. And on a product side, it's been a really tough part for me because how do you portray that in product? How do you portray that honesty and that way, especially within a SaaS product? And that's something we're still trying to figure out.
Well, I love the approach. I want to ask one maybe, you know, challenging question. As you think, so Leon today versus Leon in 5 years. So if you succeed, you're getting all these leads, you start converting these and you get larger as a product. At some point, you probably outgrow a little of the style, maybe even the copy forward. Maybe the product grows in a way where you do show it off more. Have you thought about what success looks like and how you might be able to carry forward the approaches you have today and into the future?
Yes. As long as we're honest about who we are as a company. And that honesty, I also think, changes, right? Because our insight changes and the problems that we're trying to fix changes. I'm okay with our tone and our voice right now is indicative of the space that we live in. And that idea is that employees hate their jobs and we need to do something about it because that's not okay. So that's our mission right now. Now, as more data comes in, as we have more integrations, as the signal changes for us, then maybe it does pivot to more of a product that is trying to solve different questions, right? And that is, you know, solving the diabetes issue or helping employees really understand what health is and how to drive that. As long as the mission is always about making human beings better, I think we can go any route. It doesn't matter.
I kind of want to just end with what's next for Leon? Where is Leon right now? And sort of what does the next maybe 6 to 12 months look like for you guys?
Sure. So the product is, there's some manual applications that we're doing in the product right now. So it is going to be sort of finalizing a lot of the builds within the product. But the most important thing for us, I think, moving forward is to help companies understand the cost of doing business, like I mentioned before, right? Because we can't help employees and we can't help human beings until we can help companies make better decisions on how they treat their people. So I think that's going to be our main focus moving forward is that, you know, we have a lot of brand partnerships. The product on the employee side is there, but now we need to get to a point where we can help companies make better decisions regarding their people. So that's the focus for us moving forward.
If people want to find out more about Leon, what would be the best way for them to find out?
You know, go to myleon.co and sign up for early access. At this point, we're having conversations with everybody because the conversation about how you can help people should never stop changing. It should be an ever-evolving process, much like we are as biological human beings. So go there. We'll set up a conversation. We'll talk about it and see how we can help your company.
So Christian, what did you take from that interview? I feel like you're a big fan and now an even bigger fan.
Yeah, I liked the website, which I obviously dug into, which is what attracted us to him in the first place, because it was really honest. And then I felt like he was very honest, very high energy. Love hearing founders and products that come out of, I don't think it's fair to say like sports science is like a niche. I don't know what the right word is, but I think against the grain is like not just typical office software. There's a lot of employee engagement software. A lot of it comes out of the HR, people with HR experience. It was nice to see applying a different lens to a pre-existing problem. And I think you could really hear, and you can see it on the page, on the website, you can hear it in him, the subtle shift in focus that their product has on really being an advocate. He said they wanted to be an employee advocate. And I really like that. And he mentioned, you know, sports medicine, and we talk a lot about these days about like wellness and fitness or preventative medicine, you know, that sort of thing, like getting in shape to avoid going on blood pressure medicine, things like that. He seems to be applying the same sort of mindset to the workplace, which seemed very genuine and honest. So I think that was what really stood out to me.
Yeah, I expected this conversation to be much more like data driven, especially knowing he had a sports science background. And it's like, I'm thinking about like the Moneyball thing where it's like not about the players necessarily. It's like, but let's get this right combination of like variables together and make sure that we're doing this thing. But I mean, I think for a product that is so data driven, you know, he even said it himself, like humans are subjective and we have to understand people subjectively. The way he talks about it and his brand are so human focused and so different and just not what you would expect from a company that's like so data driven.
Yeah, I agree. I think even seeing the word or whatever acronym AI, you just have something in your mind. You're like, all right, here's another engineer that's like engineering people to do these things. And he is to some degree, but like it's all with the human side in mind. So I definitely agree that was, I think, surprising. I think even as I think on the website, it starts out with AI at the top and then you scroll down and it's almost like a memo copy forward, as he put it, is definitely different. Another thing that stood out related to this was when we talked about, you know, how he sees Leon growing. You know, this is sort of like the perspective and the way they're talking right now will probably have to evolve. But what his answer was really saying, well, as long as we're being honest about it, we can grow up with, you know, with the problem space. And maybe we're focusing on diabetes in the future, that sort of thing. I thought that was a really good takeaway. I think for anybody listening to this, the value of just being honest, like through your product, through the way that you talk, as long as you do that, you won't paint yourself into a corner. You can grow up with the times as long as you stay honest.
Yeah. And it's almost that like commitment to authenticity, that things may change and that you don't know everything, or that like platitude of we know exactly what we're doing and this is the roadmap for the next 10 years. And like having that vision, but like understanding that the path may be like windy to get where you're going to be. And it sounds like they are kind of strong in what they want to do and they understand what they want to do, but not sure exactly like how that may manifest in different ways.
Yeah. It's almost like something everybody's having to do this year with, you know, coronavirus changing so many things, but it's a healthy attitude to have.
He was talking about the things you recommend to people to help them overcome burnout. And he's like, maybe it's meditation, maybe it's yoga, maybe it's whatever, bike riding or something. And he's like, but people are subjective. And to me, what I took from that, I was like, so you identify that people are subjective, yet you're building an AI product to recommend things to people. So how do you do both of those things? How do you build algorithms to support people's subjectivity. It almost feels like an oxymoron in some way. But I think it just goes back to this idea that, like, for such a data-driven product, it's so human-oriented. Maybe that's why their brand is the way it is because, like, they have to exist in this really weird space between both of those things. And so they can't follow traditional HR wording and verbiage and language, and they can't fall in that traditional, like, AI, like, attributes and matrix and, like, falling numbers. But it's like they do have to sit between those two things, and because they are, like, somewhat opposing ideas, this, like, flipping everything on its head is, like, the best way for them to approach the space.
Maybe this is really the model that AI starts to take, less of the rigid sort of box that they're creating and more learning, machine learning. Even if you think of, like, health and wellness, like, what we thought was right 20, 30 years ago evolves. And yet some of it's driven by big companies pushing an agenda, like, against sugar, against fat. But even if you look at the science, like, it just evolves. So it's funny, we're in 2020 right now. Like, there's no telling what we're going to learn in 2025 that might say, hey, we thought this was good. So I think it's almost like that. People being subjective, they change, they evolve. Even the things, I mean, Headspace wasn't even available 7 years ago. So there's an example. If they're going to recommend it today, what doesn't exist today that they might be recommending in several years? It'd be some mix of, like, I don't know, Pilates while kayaking or something. I don't know. There's going to be some new craze that we have no idea what it is yet.
Yeah. And I think he's right about the tech lash. I think people are thinking about big tech in different ways and seeing the effect of it and seeing how our brains are changed by social media and, like, how a lot of the, like, social issues we're struggling with in the world are a lot of a direct result of the, like, recommendations of algorithms of only showing you content that you've clicked on before. And by almost, like, stepping back from that and being like, yes, we are AI, but we're a learning AI and we understand that people are different. Maybe they're trying to, like, separate themselves from that, like, the scary AI or the scary big data.
Yeah. No, I think it's totally appropriate for what they're doing. All right. Well, that was a great interview with Brian. I thought he was extremely charismatic, a lot of fun. This was our first installment of a new sort of repeated format we're doing called the Better Product Spotlight, where we feature really compelling products and founders as they sort of talk about it from the lens of all things product. But as usual, I'm Christian.
And I'm Anna, and you're listening to Better Product. Thanks for listening to the show this week. If you're looking for more resources on how to design, build, market, and sell better products, then head over to betterproduct.community to join, well, the community. And as always, we're curious, what does better product mean to you? Shoot us an email at podcasts@innovatemap.com.